Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists, to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we're talking about the pitfalls and perks of working in a small marketing agency.
And I'm particularly excited because we kept secrets from each other.
We sure did.
Which is not normally something I'm able to do. So neither one of us knows what the other has on their lists,
right.
And we're going to learn here in real time, and then we will get to compare how similar or how different they are.
Spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
Well, spoiler, speaking of not keeping secrets from you, Sue, I imagine that we'll see. We'll maybe gut check ourselves at the end here. I imagine that most, if not all, of what we're going to share today will probably be applicable to small marketing teams.
Yes.
Of darn near any kind, not so much just right. an agency like ours, but
and I would
we'll see.
I would dare say that it would apply to many small teams
right.
that are
right.
similar to ours, not even just in marketing.
Right. Yep. Valid.
Because our team is, and this is true, human.
Right. Yeah.
Well, last I checked,
I mean there are a couple people I want to see if there's like cyborg going on
pretty
under there,
good.
Just saying.
Pretty good.
In the best way
in a
possible.
Good way. Yeah, yes. I always check for body snatcher eggs.
Right.
Every Monday morning. That's my
That's why you get here early.
Yeah, I get here early, check for body snatcher eggs. And
yeah.
So far so good. Everything's good.
Right.
So here's how it's going to work. We each brought one pitfall because we don't want to dwell on the negative for too long.
Right.
And so we're gonna get those out of the way. Just to get started.
Correct. And then we're going to reveal our top five perks of working at a small agency, like exclamation. One at a time, starting at five and ending with one.
And
although mine are really in no particular order.
Okay, but this is a top five list, so.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
In very,
again, you can't keep secrets.
Right.
You could have just not told me.
Well, see, here's the thing. I did read our notes in that we were going to do this in order like that, but I really, really struggled to put them in any kind of like meaningful order. So
okay.
We'll see. Maybe it'll feel natural as we go along.
Yeah. It's a pretty big leap to assume the minor in meaningful order.
Right.
They're in order.
Yeah,
<okay. laughs> certainly. But meaningful.
Got it.
Up to the, in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
As they say.
I'm so excited to see how many of ours are exactly the same, if not similar enough.
What if, it'd be so dope if they were just
like perfect.
Right down the line.
Yeah, that would,
perfect.
Dope and also maybe quickest episode ever, if that's how it shakes
okay,
out.
Okay, so we don't want it that way. Yeah. All right.
That's all right. Let's go, right?
Herge. So why don't you kick us off? Give
right.
us your pitfall.
All right. First and only pitfall. I'm sure we could think of more. But like you said, we don't want to dwell on the negative. So the first one is the hat juggle.
Ooh.
Small team, many hats. Whether you're the strategist, the copywriter, the designer, social media manager, everything else, and doing all of that before lunch.
Yeah.
We're constantly wearing multiple hats, which, let's face it, like can be super overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
The workload attached with all those roles can be overwhelming, those roles individually. And then on top of it, shift from them moment to moment, hour to hour,
right.
minute to minute, right?
Right. Especially because we have some pretty great people on the team. And some of those role shifts, I think we realize, if I could do this full time, it would be a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Results
totally.
Would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest, my biggest fear about it. Burnout is real. Confusion or like not feeling like you're getting anything done, I think is real for sure. But that feeling of like, am I even good at any of this?
Yes.
Is probably the like biggest risk of the hat juggle because like you're just moving so quickly and shifting from thing to thing. And I suppose part of it is less about what you're doing and the fact that you're juggling a bunch of responsibilities, but more just about that pace and how you're probably not taking time to like look back on the work that you did and realize some of it was good or maybe all of it was good or what the results were and stuff. So with the hat juggle comes, I think, an environment where you don't get to analyze your work. You don't get to, really understand and appreciate how good it is or how bad it is and learn from it, right?
Right.
So that's probably the biggest risk with the hat juggle. And it's necessary, right? Mm-hmm. With the small team, like there is just no way around it. Like you're going to be doing different things. You're going to be doing some things that maybe you didn't go to school for or, you know, are outside of your comfort zone. But how do you get comfortable with a level of that while also being an expert in something and getting really good at right. something too? That's maybe the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting choice because I don't want to spoil it. But when we get to the perks, I have sort of a parallel sort of thing there.
Nice.
And actually, what I chose for our pitfall is it's sort of... blends into what you're talking about, which is our ambition outpacing our capacity. Mm. So we sometimes struggle to do everything we want to do, including some of the experimentation, some of the analysis, some of those things that could show us if we're succeeding or failing because we have to stay focused on efficiency. And we don't have the along with not necessarily taking the time, like you're pointing out, like stopping to see, I did a good job.
Yeah.
There are some things I should change, whatever the answer is. We don't necessarily right now have space built in for quote unquote failure. So we don't give ourselves the permission to try something that might be stupid.
Yeah.
Not stupid isn't the right word, but something that, you know, that is our, I don't know, name the marketing, baby, what is it? Baby puppy monkey?
Yeah.
Monkey, I can't remember. Monkey baby, monkey puppy baby? I don't know what it was. Do you remember that commercial though?
Mm-mm,
no. Yeah. Okay. So, gosh, I don't know how many years ago it is. And I can't even remember the brand. Mm. But it was just such a weird commercial, and it was some weird hybrid of a baby and a puppy and a monkey.
Well, we're going to have to find that.
Yeah. So that's clearly very weird and stupid.
Yeah.
And deliberately so.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So things like that, you know, you can take a big shot and it can really fall short.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have tolerance built in for taking a big shot.
Yeah. I'll push back a little bit in that, we have, speaking just of our team, now this might not be everybody's experience, but we have made some space for like trying some new things or doing things that are, you know, maybe a bit unproven. I mean, the podcast, right? Like, I mean, we started this once upon a time, knowing that it was a space we needed to be in and it was a, you know, emerging channel to share content and stuff, but we didn't really know, like, is the payoff there? And, you know, and our audience has grown over time. So like now, after years of doing this, you know, we are able to confidently say like, yeah, this is something we need to be doing, should be doing. But I think once upon a time, even for us who are really bought into it, from the beginning, like we didn't know for sure, like, is this really what we should be doing, you know? So, and then there's like, you know, some events and stuff that we've done. And even I would say some campaigns, whether it's a quick social media campaign, like we've done some stuff that I think is in that like test experimental sort of phase, but I think what I'm saying is not to like disprove what you're saying. I think it goes along with exactly what you're saying where like, when we do those things, we got to be like super intentional because we only have so much time for it.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And even I think the things that you point out, and I agree with you, there are things, it's not that we aren't experimenting at all.
Right.
It is that we can't experiment with something that we think will fail.
Yeah.
You know, and we can't do it saying, this could go either way. We have to go in to any of those experiments saying, you know, we have
pretty
this
confident
research or this confidence or, you know, we have these other maybe examples or whatever, that it will succeed.
Yeah.
And
the price we pay there is possibly like not making time to do something that's truly, totally original or, you know, that's going to catch people by surprise and things like
that. Like baby monkey puppy.
Like, exactly.
I can't believe you missed that commercial. Yeah. So weird. Yeah. So weird. Okay. Maybe I'll find it and we'll share it with us so people can see. I think I'm saying it right. I don't think I'll offend the baby monkey puppy if I'm not. Okay.
So you feeling okay about Pitfalls?
I feel, you know what?
It went very fast.
Yeah. I feel great about it, though.
Me too.
I think it's all true.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Challenge, listener, think of your pitfalls. And I'm sure that the two that we mentioned are something that you're probably experiencing, but we probably could have made a whole episode about them.
Probably.
But we're not going to go there. We're going to shift to the perks.
Yay.
Ready for my first one?
I am.
It is, I just couldn't think of a better title, so it's Wicked Agility. You like that? Is that good? Is that cool?
It's wicked good.
Wicked good agility.
Where you going to park your car?
Yeah, I park
it. It's so wicked.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, hey, the fact is smaller teams can pivot more quickly, generally, right? Less red tape, less approval, less chain of command, all of the things that can slow a team down, and probably faster implementation of some things. Not to go right back into pitfalls or anything, but a smaller team, less resources also probably means slower implementation of some things. If you've got a big team, you know, big enough where somebody on that team owns your CRM, like you can probably implement a CRM quicker and new tools and ways to use a CRM way quicker.
Gosh, what's on your mind?
Yeah, right. but our team, you know, that's a shared duty. Thinking of that one specifically, but a lot of things are shared, right? So good news is we can choose to do things quicker and we can maybe dive into implementing those things quicker, but a full deep implementation that's fully owned by someone might not always be possible depending on the size of your team. But I do think that the, and I'm certainly biased because we have a small team, but I do like the ability for us to like just try a thing and just dive into it, you know, because we don't have to cut through any of the crap that can slow us down to try those things, you know?
Yeah. That moment when we realize that we're the only thing that blocks us from what we want to do is sometimes really, really sort of a cool moment where you go, oh yeah,
right.
Actually.
Yeah. Let's just do it.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah, for sure. Lots of cool opportunity to test there. And I think that's, again, not to always bring it back to the negative or the pitfalls, but I suppose the challenge with this one is, yeah, just like you can quickly try new things. A challenge that I would say I have and we probably have as a team and many do is to also very quickly bail on things that just aren't working, you know? So like some of this stuff that we try, it is kind of a test and we're pretty aware going in that it's a test. And something that maybe we struggle with is to identify quickly, like, yep, okay, that's the thing that we don't have time for, we can't do it really well, we don't have the resources for it, the results aren't there, whatever, so like, ripcord, let's go, you know, on to the next thing that we want to try.
Yeah, there is some persistence of hope that we have with those things, and I think it goes sort of hand in hand with that feeling of wanting to make sure we're being thorough, wanting to make sure we're being iterative.
Yeah.
What did we do? What are the, you know, what are the circumstances, outside circumstances, inside circumstances? Did we not do it well enough? Did we not do enough?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's maybe, that's where I feel myself getting bogged down. Like, ooh, I can see 10 things that we could have done differently. So Let's do those one at a time now.
I will say, though, to your previous point about how, like, we've got to kind of vet things out before we try because we've got limited resources and all that stuff. I think that that helps contribute to the hope that we have for some things. It's like, well, like, this should work. And, you know, we chose this thing because we thought it would. And we also know that the flip side of, like, bailing on things too soon is marketers and, I think, business people in general, particularly for marketing efforts, don't give things a try for long enough when they do it, you know? Like, it's why, like, when we sign agreements with people or when we try to do campaigns, like, we're always encouraging, like, more time. Like, make sure that you're giving yourself enough time to see the results or to see whether the end result might still be, like, yep, that didn't work.
Right.
But, like, make sure that you remove the variable that it didn't work because you didn't give it enough time, you know? So I think that's part of it too, why we kind of get I don't want to say stuck, but to move us along. That's, I think that's why we get stuck on some things, yeah, because we want to make sure that we've given it the time to prove right or wrong, yes or no, yeah, worked or didn't, you know.
We sometime, again, we don't want to dwell on the negative.
Yeah.
But I think it would be really interesting to talk about the things that we are, that have not worked, and we are just so positive there's a version of the multiverse where they should be working.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting conversation. There's one in particular that is on my mind that I'm like, should work. Everything about it tells me it should work.
Oh, let's take that offline.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So since I spoiled it already.
Oh, boy.
What was your pitfall?
Wicked agility.
No, your pitfall.
Oh, my pitfall. Sorry. Not my first perk.
Not your first perk.
It was the hat juggle.
Okay. So my first perk, perk number 5, by the way,
yeah,
said the person who ordered these,
right,
is lean team equals skill building. Mm. So, yes, we juggle a lot of hats.
Yeah.
Yes, there can be pitfall. There's certainly a pitfall,
yeah,
in that. And it also means that things that we as individuals have never done sometimes just get the opportunity to learn to do it.
Right.
I don't think, although my relationship with Google is incredibly strained, I don't think I can really tell you there's a time I would say, either you or I, or we gave it to somebody on the team, and they just weren't able to do the thing entirely. So, yes. That does, we can turn that into a pitfall by all of a sudden, oh, we're good at everything and we can do all of the things and you just learn to do the thing and you'll be fine.
Right.
That can be a problem. But because we have fewer people, our people know how to do more things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. And I definitely see that. I suppose some of this comes with attitude and maybe how much tolerance your business has for it. But I definitely see that as much as, like, you know, the hat juggle was my pitfall. Mm-hmm. I see the positive in it. I see the perk in it more. And I'm sure that has something to do with the shape of our business currently, the kind of mm-hmm. teams that I've worked on historically, like throughout my whole career. Like, I've never been a part of the big corporation that has a digital marketing department that has 80 people in it by itself. That's this one little facet of marketing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'm a little biased, but.
And I do want you to know, because part of the whole podcast ethos here is that I deal with some of my trauma with you. I wrote that even though
yeah.
there are times I take something on and go, damn it, I hate Google.
Yeah.
Damn it, I hate this. I hate not knowing how to do it. I hate that. I think everybody hates that feeling.
Yeah.
Where even if you like to, if you say you're a lifelong learner, and not to, I just crapped on saying that, but you get the idea. Yeah. You say that you're that person and you like new challenges and whatever, that moment when you realize, oh, I like new challenges, but I like when new challenges work.
Yeah.
Not when yeah. I can't figure it out. Yeah. That's my dark night of the soul is when that kind of stuff happens.
Are you okay? I'm glad we can be here for you.
And listen, one more thing. It is.
Do you want to lie down?
I kind of do.
Yeah.
It is so much worse, even though I appreciate it, when I can come to you and go, I can't figure this out.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, no, it's just here.
Oh, like, that is. Oh, no. Yep, I get it.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
But I appreciate it when it's done.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is better than you walking into someone's office and being like, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, we'll figure it out.
Meanwhile, you're like, crap, I committed to figuring this out. Yeah. Okay. Ready for number four.
Backwards.
Collaboration and cross skills. So we got tight relationships and a broader skill set, I think, because we're able to work so closely with each other. And I guess this is playing into yours, and, you know, still in the category of the hat juggle, you know, we train each other, we learn from each other, we share good and bad with each other. You know, we're able to offload things quickly to others that can help us get something done. Or when we get stumped, we can walk in and say, mm-hmm. I can't figure this thing out, right? So instead, I think that the best part of all of that is it's like almost impossible for us to be siloed, mm-hmm. right? Like there's just nobody on our team that, I mean, I think of people on our team that have like the clear specialty that they have, you know, Kylie's our illustrator, Pam's our, you know, main web person, mm-hmm. you know, and lots of times feels like they're the only people doing that kind of stuff. But we do have other people on the team that can support, can do work right. similar enough to it, you know, to keep things moving forward and stuff. So it's almost impossible for anyone to just own their thing and tuck themselves in the corner and not work with anyone else. Like that just won't work on our team.
Right.
You know, so that's, I think, the best part of the collaboration, the cross skills and all of that. So, and I really think it applies to everything. Strategy, tactical stuff, all mm-hmm. of it, you know.
Can you see the excited look on my face? I'm so excited. My number four is collaboration / ideation.
Hey, look at that.
With the whole team.
Cool.
And so not only am I agreeing with you,
yeah.
I want to extrapolate that. You point out, you know, it applies to a lot of different things. And the thing we haven't talked about yet is the internal workings of the team. So when we're thinking about, what is a guideline we think we should set for this thing? Or what is a, I'm thinking of the guideline that we set for business development time, right? Mm-hmm. And it also circles back to this idea that we can implement some of these things relatively quickly. So we had a conversation. If people are going out and being a part of, this is for the listeners.
Yeah.
You lived it. If people are going out and being a part of different organizations and volunteering in ways during the working day mm-hmm. that we think could benefit the business, then they should be paid
sure.
to do that. Right. And we should talk about what it looks like that we don't have, you don't have to punch out and punch back in. And we should talk about how that can work on the team and what's a reasonable amount of time yeah. that we can do it.
Yeah.
And we were able to talk to the whole team, present something like that to them, get pretty quick buy-in.
Right.
You know, it's just one example, but there are a lot of those things, you know, the whole accountable teams thing. Right. And when we've, the stuff that we've worked on with inclusive teams, you know, like all of that, all of those kinds of things, the whole team can be a part of because we're small enough
right.
that we don't have to say, oh no, don't, you know, don't let the illustrators
yeah.
or, you know, don't let the web design department, they don't have to be a part of that.
Right.
That's this department over here. Everybody can just be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that, I think that helps us build something kind of really special.
Yeah.
Because people feel bought into those things.
Right. Yeah. And hey, if you're on a big team and hearing this and feeling a little jealous, you should be. Just kidding.
Yeah.
no, hopefully.
Sucks to yeah. suck.
Hopefully inside that big, you know, behemoth organization that has different, you know, departments and stuff, each of those teams are doing similar kind of right. work and having their own little, you know, individuality. And then as a greater whole, everybody's a little bit better because everybody's working on their own thing. You know, I think those are the healthy organizations where regardless of the size of your team, like you're working on stuff and trying new things and learning together in mm-hmm. a way that feels small, feels a bit more intimate, and, you know, you feel connected with your team, and then the whole organization's better because of it. So, but we also know that that is harder in bigger organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, that stuff might be happening, but how much, like, sharing, and are you actually creating the, you know, high tide lift all boats sort of scenario,
right.
or are you just kind of, like, worried about your own ship? You know what I mean? So
yeah. Yeah, and I think one of the ways, probably the closest parallel that I can draw is thinking about, you know, in the credit union industry and the branch model where it's really easy for branches to do great things, especially if they're separated by a little bit of distance.
Right, right.
And have great ideas, but then that not necessarily, I mean, it does good things for that branch and for that community, but if you can't find a way to push that back, you know, push that power back into the organization and have people collaborating, then you run a risk. We're not talking about pitfalls, but you run this risk of that redheaded stepchild feeling. Like nobody listens to us. Nobody cares what we're doing. We're doing great things and nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, it's no big secret to you, but having come from a branch years ago, like that's the feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and no need for it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. It's like solar energy. You want to push power back to the grid.
Right. Yeah. Perfect analogy.
Thank you. I thought of it like 2 minutes ago, and I'm like, I gotta get
gotta sneak that in.
Gotta get that one in there. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Ready for my number three?
Number three.
All right. Closer to the mission, period.
Mm.
So with a smaller team, you just have a clearer line of sight to the impact of the work that you're doing, growing your brand, driving results. And yeah, you're just kind of like, you're not a cog in the big machine, you know? I think it's just inevitable. And I suppose I can see on a small team where maybe you don't get this as well, but it feels almost impossible for you to not see the connection to the work that you're doing when you're on a small team.
Right.
You know, because either you're closer to the leadership that's in charge of sharing those kind of things, the results and the impact, or you're directly working with the client in a way that maybe you wouldn't in, you know, part of a bigger organization. So, yeah. And I think that is really powerful, you know, to, as much as a big organization might be awesome about communicating mission, vision, values, and living it and breathing it and their culture and all of those things, like to see the, like where the rubber meets the road and, you know, to see the real stuff happening out in the world, you might just not be able to avoid being disconnected from it in a bigger organization, you know, directly.
Right.
You might get lots of great results, lots of great stories and all of that, but you might still be a bit disconnected. And I think a small team, we've got the advantage of lots of times really directly interacting with it. So big perk for me.
It's funny you should say
that. Oh, no. Are you serious?
I mean, not quite. It's this one I think is they're close.
Okay.
These, yeah. So my number three is we, and that is you and I, not just the team, but you and I can have relationships with our clients, which is, I think, it's different than any vendor relationship I'm in. Where a lot of great companies, we have a lot of great partners, but I think everybody can resonate with this vendor relationship where you have your regular representative, right, who is like the customer service level. And then every fifth call, some manager
hops on
and is there there long enough to say, well, I don't know if you've heard about this new innovation, and I'm not sure if Chad here has told you that we're doing this, if that'd be something you'd be interested in, let's set up a call. And you get that once or twice a year. And and we're not at the point, first of all, I want to draw a line in the sand and say I don't ever want to be that person.
Yeah.
second of all, we're not at a point where we have to completely disengage in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a perk to that. Now we'll grow.
Right.
And it will become unmanageable.
Right.
To think that every client will at least know one of us.
Right.
But at this point, we're in this sweet spot where, you know, We can see them. We can see their faces. We can talk to them.
Yeah.
We can have, you know, one of my favorite things that we can do is we can collaborate with them in the moment, in real time, not in a way that is, I don't know if you saw this new product that we're doing, but in a way that they say, hey, this is like, this is literally what's on my mind in this moment.
Yeah.
And we can collaborate right then, which is a great feeling because that's what we're here to do, you know, to help people with what is keeping them awake at night, if we can.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that'll be a challenge for us and a challenge, I think, for every small team is, you know, as you do grow, how do you keep that same spirit?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it'll hit the point where it's unmanageable. And I do think that there is a way where, you know, the top-level leadership of an organization can stay engaged in a, like, real authentic way and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not just be the pop-in salesperson every couple months or 6 months or whatever, once a year. Or when they see you at a conference or whatever. Here I go. Those are some experiences I've had. Or how do you, like, intentionally stay out of it? You know, which is also a solution, I think. Like, don't try to, like, you know, leverage your way into in between you and the person at your company that actually has the relationship with the client. Like, stay out of it. You know, you'll be invited in to have the handshake and stuff when the time is right. But, like, you've got good people in place to take care of those relationships. So trust them to do it.
Yeah.
And stay out of the way, you know?
Yeah. I, the only real life experience I have here is from retail. You know, working in a store where we had really strict rules. The specific example I can give you is a really strict rule around returns. And I worked in a shoe store, and you could not return worn shoes.
Yeah,
and that was the rule. And when we would do it, we would get in trouble.
Yeah.
And I had an experience where the district manager was there that day, and a customer was spicy about it, and, you know, I was apologetic. I was as helpful as I could possibly be, and he literally walked up in between me and the counter and said, I am so sorry. Let me absolutely take care of that for you. And
you've told me this story before.
Yeah, and like, that kind of, that clearly, I was probably 22 when that happened. So that clearly stuck with me as, like, I never, ever want to be that person.
Yeah.
To say, oh, this person doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah. Let me make this right for you.
Yeah. When it was literally what you told us we had to do.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the wrong way to do it, I think, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to share an example of a coffee shop I was in, big brand. And
gosh, I wonder what that could be.
There's a couple of them. I get a specific kind of brew every time I go to this coffee shop. It's what I like. I actually like the taste of it. It's exactly what I want.
Are you getting a venti or are you getting a grande?
And clearly, like, district leadership or bigger leadership was in or whatever and back behind the counter helping out when they were in between whatever they were working on. And I asked for what I like, and they said, have you tried this other one? I'm like, yeah, I've tried it before, but I like this one. It's just my favorite. And then immediately dives into, like, this deep dive education on why the other one is something I really have to try. And at the end of the day, what was a bit confusing to me was, like, at the end of the day, what he was essentially selling me on was another kind of drip coffee that, like, would result in no more money for them or anything. And I suppose maybe the argument is he was trying to educate me and just make sure that I'm getting, you know, really what I would like best or whatever. But I did say, I've tried it before. I did say,
yeah,
I actually like this one. This is why I get it every time. So I felt like I was, like, this demo of like, here's how we need to educate our customers you know, where the bean comes from, blah, 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 all this crap. And I was like, dude. Yeah. And especially, like, I went in there because I had, like, 45 minutes to kill between appointments, and it didn't make sense for me to, like, get home or back to the office or anywhere else. I would have just been wasting time driving around. So it like was even worse for me. Like not only did you give me this education that I did not want, did not ask for, but like you're actually wasting the time that I came here to save.
Right.
So like, yeah, it's funny how that stuff can just really kill an experience when those people probably thought they were doing the right thing. Like, right. Yeah. Like your dude stepping in between, oh, let me make that right for you. Like in the moment they're like, oh, I'm going to save the day. When really it's like, oh shoot. I just went against the thing that I told them not to do. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That is disappointing.
Yeah.
Why do that? Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever said to someone, because you know me, and you know this is probably definitely something that I have done in my life. Listen, man, I'm in sales. This thing you're doing, you don't have to do it.
Yeah. Have I ever said that to anyone? I mean, maybe some version of it for sure.
Not the way I'm saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and maybe in my nature, the way I would say it would be like, I get it.
Yeah.
Like,
I get it.
A little tongue in cheek, like, I get what you're doing. I get it. Without having to call it out as sales and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Clearly things for me to work on.
Right.
That's all fine.
Hey, we're all working on something.
Yeah.
Are we ready to move on to number two?
Yes.
All right. My number two is creative freedom. So fewer layers of approval, a more flexible structure, just really allows us to like try stuff that at least we've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe based on what we're seeing and observing in our market or our industry or whatever, hasn't been done before either. So yeah, just less approval. And really at the end, like the benefit is it allows us to be more authentic, allows us to mm-hmm. try the things we want to try, allows us to be the most real version of ourselves for our audience or for the client that we're working on mm-hmm. their work for, you know? So I think it's like, a freshness is the like outcome of that, you know, like
right.
we can do stuff that just feels fresher. Maybe I just have spring on the mind. I don't know.
That could be.
Yeah.
Listen, I am not, as you well know, I am not in a habit of sucking up to you. So that is not what this is, but I have got to say that probably the best thing you ever did, for my career, for every facet around what it takes for me to like what I'm doing, and you know, was to give me creative freedom. When early on, when we were developing a brand voice, and we were, you know, doing some of those things, and I wanted to express it in a way that was drastically different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I continue, you know, with now both brands that we're working on, wanting to just express things in a different way, in a more, why am I trying to sell it to you when I'm trying to do? But that in this more personable, colloquial way, and when you allowed me to see that you were going to let it happen, you were going to even endorse some of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because there is a difference between saying, yeah, well, if that's what you think you should do.
Yeah.
And saying, no, that's awesome. Do that.
Right. Yeah.
So that, yeah.
And I've got your back, right?
Like,
that's maybe
right.
The most valuable part of it is to know that you got somebody standing behind you saying like, yep.
Yeah.
You're doing the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That's awesome. And I hope it's something I never lose. I think it's really important. In the line of work that we do, like, some level of that has to exist. Otherwise, like, talk about soul suck. Like, I mean, to not be able to make your own decisions or try things in that free way, I mean, you're going to run out of gas real quick.
Yeah. Is it harder to do that in design than it was for writing? Because you're a designer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We should maybe ask people that are doing it a bit more often than I am these days. Because honestly, anything that I'm doing nowadays when it comes to design is pretty safe or pretty structured. You know, maybe like touching up something that already exists, or it's. But I mean, really, the only design, most of the design that I'm doing nowadays is like volunteer stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a great question for some of the people that are like really trying the new things for our clients and for ourselves and stuff. But I think I can put myself in their shoes, and, you know, I've been there in the past and stuff. And I don't know that I can say it's any harder. Cause like you were maybe creating something that people would be reading or hearing in a different way for the first time. Like, I think designers are doing the same thing. It's just maybe stuff that people are seeing mm-hmm. for the first time. And I suppose maybe the bigger issue or challenge with all that now is just the amount of content that mm-hmm. lives in the world today and the amount of advertising that we see every day, where, you know, once upon a time it was like sexy to break design rules intentionally. And now it's like, are there design rules anymore? I mean, there are for sure. And actually, the only way that breaking them works is to know that they exist. But yeah, you just—it's almost like the gloves are off with all of mm-hmm. that stuff: voice, brand voice, writing, and design, whether it's visual or whatever. So
I hate to correct you.
Oh, God.
But my specific question was: technically, is it harder to allow a designer creative freedom than a writer, because? Listen, we're writing a book, and you do a fine job. But the way I experience it on the other side is very often that I say to the person who is doing writing, so when Scott is doing writing, mm-hmm. I can be extremely pointed in my feedback and give extremely granular, sometimes pedantic feedback. But I do admit to him when I'm being pedantic. But for the design folks, I don't give them as specific feedback. I allow them maybe more creative freedom.
Yeah. I think it's two things. One, as much as I love you, Sue, I think it's part of who you are. And your love of control of the things that you own.
What?
Yep.
I have a love of control?
Yep.
First time I'm hearing it.
And the time and care and precision that's gone into our voice. The other thing, mm-hmm. too, is I think our design style, our guidelines and stuff, while they're in place and have been developed, there's just more freedom baked into them. Like, mm-hmm. our look and feel has more flexibility than maybe our voice. And I don't think I'm just justifying what you're saying and mm-hmm. experiencing. I think it's true. Like, our look and feel is pretty flexible. We've got a color scheme to stay in, and we've got this new, you know, mixed media sort of like umbrella for how things look and stuff. But that's saying a whole lot. Whereas our voice is pretty tight.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
I don't know. And you love control. So
I do.
There's that too.
Love control.
Yeah.
There's the right amount of control, and it's all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you share your number two yet?
I didn't yet. Okay. We haven't gotten there yet. That's my fault. My bad.
All good.
My number two is the close relationships on our team.
Mm.
So there's just six of us.
Yeah.
And some of us, at least two of us, have been trying to schedule coffee for 3 months.
Yeah.
And trying, have not had an opportunity to do it. But others of us, the design team works all in the same office. They, for better or for worse, they have an opportunity to have conversations that, you know, just proximity.
Right.
And to share their real lives. And we do as a team to have those conversations, despite the fact that we've been trying for 3 months to schedule coffee and haven't done it.
You're drinking coffee right now.
But you're not, and you can see how it's not working. So I do, but I do believe even for you and I, we have the benefit of being able to have much closer relationships with the folks on the team. And
for sure.
You know. Yeah. And I think we make, I think we do a good job of making space for it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, for real time set aside for it. And it's a part of our conversations when we're thinking about, like, ways we want to improve as a team. Like, there's a genuine care for each other that I think comes out every time that we have the opportunity for that feedback. And we're pretty fortunate. We got some pretty awesome humans on our team, too, because I can also see where those relationships with not quite the right personality mix and things like that could also be pretty sucky on a small team, too. So
yeah,
we're lucky we got some great folks.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely been on teams where I don't think I ever, maybe I felt this way, but where other people on the team said, I'm not here to make friends.
Yeah. Just here to work.
Just here to work. You know, which is also not untrue.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we don't pay people. This isn't RuPaul's best friends race, Ben.
Yeah.
We don't pay people to make friends. But when you have to have that attitude, that to me is a signal there's a problem in relationships. So,
yeah, no doubt.
Ready for number one?
I'm ready for number one.
So excited.
All right. My number one is a stronger voice at the table. So in a small company, we get our ideas and opinions carrying more weight. And I think that's, oh gosh, I think Sue might have something similar.
So excited.
And this, I think, is not a blanket statement for all small teams. I can see a team of two where one person gets the weight in the decision and the other one doesn't, you know?
One person who likes control.
Right. Yeah. Well, sorry. Yeah.
Like to meet somebody like that someday?
Yeah. They sound nice. But I mean, really, on our team, of course, decisions need to be made, and we've made it really clear as to who makes which decisions, which I think helps our environment and our culture where everyone has a voice, because everyone gets to speak up, and at the end of the day, someone's going to make the decision, and we know who that is. Mm-hmm. But really, when we're having an open discussion, my voice carries as much weight as the person that started a year ago, you know, and that's a beautiful thing and definitely something that I don't think every team has.
Yeah. Yeah. So my number one, extremely similar, thinking about the same thing. The whole team gets to build the business.
Mm, yeah.
So exactly what you're saying.
Right.
People, we open up conversations. We make some decisions collaboratively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't want to keep patting ourselves on the back, but I think that we also do a good job of balancing to not put all of the onus, all of the responsibility on the team. So the decisions that need to not be, so, you know, the whole team decision, we handle.
Yeah.
And so it's not, it doesn't become a, so far, it has not become a misbalance where we decide to do something, you and I make a decision, and then the team's like, what? We all, everybody gets to decide. Like, it hasn't turned into anything weird like that.
Right.
And I think it is, I definitely made this my number one because of where we are in the business, and because we're building this thing, and it gives me, as someone who supervises the team, the opportunity to tell them, you know, when we're coaching or when we're working through something, you know, to have, you know, this really frank discussion of, like, think about the business in 10 years and think about the people at the table right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the picture that I have is that there's no reason that everybody here right now is not in a top-level position at that point.
Right.
So it benefits us to be able to collaborate well. It benefits us for everyone to be able to have power, you know, and decision-making, and also not just the power and the ability to make decisions, but then the experience of what the outcome is of the decision. Because it's not always going to be good. We're not, even as a team, we're not always going to make a good collaborative decision.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is, it certainly is, because I made it my number one.
Yeah.
To me, the best.
Yeah.
The best perk of having that small team.
For sure. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and I think it speaks to some of the stuff that we've been saying already about an environment like that allowing us to be like the most authentic version of ourselves as individuals and the most authentic version of ourselves as a collective, as a company, mm-hmm. right? Because there's ownership. It's like the thing when you say you want to run your team as its own business, or you know, you want people to feel like an ownership in the company, like this is a big factor in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think very often people will say that, and it is not with the follow through of actually giving them that ownership.
Right. Yeah.
It is with this feeling of, well, why aren't you working 70 hours a week like I am? Yeah. And why aren't you,
right.
you know?
Yeah. It's to like, get
why don't
own...
you call in on your day off?
Yeah.
That's not what ownership is.
Right. Right. For sure. Yeah. You can own that as long as I approve it.
Or yeah. Yeah.
You can own that as long as you're working as much as I am or whatever. Yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I think like three of our five were kind of like in the same spot, not only like super similar, but in the same spot. And I think the others were at least closely related.
Right.
So.
Right. And we at least didn't disagree on any of them.
Right. Yeah.
Which I think, now listen, if it bleeds, it leads, and that would have made better content. But
yeah.
Do you think, I think people probably are. Every time we agree on something, do you think somebody should make a drinking game is what should happen?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, we'd have a lot of intoxicated people. Probably not the best for business.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going into the episode, I was a little concerned that like the pitfalls would just kind of be like reframes of perks and the perks would be reframes of pitfalls, you know? Mm-hmm. And we made some connections for sure, but I think they were like genuinely two separate categories of things, which I liked.
So yeah. Yeah.
This
well,
was fun.
It's, I mean, listen, we are three-dimensional people and we live with nuance.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it comes with this undercurrent of understanding that the things that we love about something, there's work to get there.
Mm-hmm.
There maybe is some dark underbelly that got us to that point
mm-hmm.
that somebody could call a pitfall, but
yeah,
you know, that's what makes us well-rounded.
That's right.
Well, that was extremely fun. And we appreciate you, listener, for being here with us as we, you know, got a chance not only to talk about perks and pitfalls, but, and we didn't mention this at the top, so much fun to be back in the studio. It has been, I don't know how long it's been since we've actually recorded.
First time in a while, yeah.
Here in, with our real mics.
Yeah.
And that's always fun to look at, because we can't schedule coffee. And that,
yeah.
It's always fun to do that.
Yeah.
You can always learn more about us at our website, exclamationcuso.com. And you can catch all of the episodes of Awesomology on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you, Sue. Thank you, friends, for tuning in. Be awesome. We'll see you next time. The Awesomology podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Executive producers are myself, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.
Thanks to Kyla Ganther for our show artwork, Scott Sager for booking our guests, and Alex Westerhausen for social media support.